AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Tick, 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 boom. Well, you know what they say. They say that shoes ain't cheap and booking ain't easy. And we have literally been buggering around all day. It has been a fun, wonderful start to a week. And we're going to welcome you all to our Meltdown Monday. As always, I'm repping it here in the UK. He is repping it over there in the AZ. And today we have got a true international incident as we are bringing in the stars from all over the globe. It is going to be sensational. It is going to be fun. It is going to be fresh. It is going to be unique. And we are going to be zebra striped. We're hitting it for the three count. But before we do so, that three is a big number, because he is a three-time tag team champion of the world. He's my tag team partner. He's going to kick it off. Ladies and gentlemen, the legend that is Brian Clark. Woo!
Thank you for that great intro, Tomcat. Ladies and gentlemen, do not get it twisted. He is the three-time UK host of the year and Guinness World Record holder. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the Tomcat of Manchester, and he is my tag team partner, no doubt about it. I'm excited. We have a fantastic show today. We have had a couple of legendary referees on this show, and today is no different. He makes number three for us. That doesn't mean he's number three, but he is our third guest in the series, and we are going to get started here. Our special guest on the Meltdown, he was a referee, as I said, with the WWF and the WWE for 22 years. That's right, 22 years, ladies and gentlemen. From 1987 to 2009, he has worked alongside some of the greatest sports entertainers, from Hulk Hogan to Andre the Giant, John Cena to Kurt Angle, Stone Cold to The Undertaker, and so many more. He has worked at some of the biggest events in pro wrestling history. He is a Canadian Pro Wrestling Hall of Famer, class of 2021, and a New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Famer, class of 2015. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Meltdown, Mr. Jimmy Corderas.
Woo-hoo! Thank you guys for having me. Wow, what an intro, man. How much do I owe you?
Send the check in the mail, my man.
Right. Hey, will it be a blue check? Should I send a blue check?
Jimmy, I'll tell you. We have been looking forward to having you on here, man. I'm glad that we could finally get coordinated time-wise. You have been on my list for a while, and just want to thank you from the get-go for blessing us here with your presence. I know you are a busy man with all of the things that you have going on, including your show, and we will discuss that a little bit later. But again, thank you for joining us today.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me. It's appreciated very much. I try to keep busy. I'm supposed to be retired, but I guess that's not working out too well.
I know that feeling. I tell myself, I'm like, I retired years ago. Why am I so busy? But as I was talking earlier off the air with the Tomcat, I said, I guess we are blessed really to stay so busy, even though we are retired. And it does. It keeps us, you know, health is wealth and mental sharpness as best we can. So that's just sort of the way we have to look at it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it also gets me out of my wife's hair.
Oh, see, there you go.
It's always a silver lining, right?
Yes. For years, it was kind of like I was never home. And then all of a sudden, it's like, don't you have something to do? Like, go play golf with your buddies or something?
Yeah, you just get
out of the way. My wife does it all the time.
Yeah, Jimmy's a big-time golfer. I know that. I've heard all about some of your golfing, different tournaments you've been in and some of the legends you've played with. So we have a lot to unpack, we definitely want to go through some of the milestones in your career. And again, we'll definitely talk about some of the things you have going on, all the different projects you have. But I'd like to start with, if you could tell me about your backstory, because this is a very interesting backstory, and it ties in to the legendary WWF president Jack Tunney. I think all of our listeners out there would love to hear the story of how you got your foot in the door of pro wrestling. Can you tell us that?
Yeah, I was a huge fan for like everybody else. I love professional wrestling, and here in Toronto, we got so much of it on television. I mean, all day Saturday there was different. We had, of course, Maple Leaf Wrestling, like you mentioned, with Jack Tunney as the promoter. We used to get Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling on a Buffalo affiliate station. We got Stampede Wrestling from Calgary, AWA Wrestling, International Wrestling from Montreal, and then Saturday nights we'd have Hockey Night in Canada, of course, because it is Canada. And after the Leaf game, they had All-Star Wrestling from Vancouver on another, one of those affiliate stations. Thank goodness we had cable at the time. So all day long I watched wrestling. I wanted, I just it just there was something about it. I just it took me. And when I got old enough to be able to go on my own, because when I was younger, obviously every once in a while my brother would take me, my older brother and stuff, I would go to the Maple Leaf Gardens. Every 3 weeks, they ran the garden every 3 weeks like clockwork. And I would go and I'd take pictures. I'd sit second row ringside right beside that iconic ramp that Maple Leaf Gardens used to have, the entranceway from the dressing room to the ring. And I'd take pictures. And we had a place up here in Canada called Direct Film. When you had to actually take your film in and get developed so you can have pictures, they would double your prints for a dollar. So I would get a second set of prints, I would bring them with me to the next show, and I would sell them for $2 a picture,
Wow.
which helped fuel my wrestling habit. Like, it would pay for the ticket, pay for the parking, paid for everything. Yeah, I made a few bucks on the side, I won't lie. And I got caught selling the tickets by Jack Tunney's right-hand man, Elio Zarlenga, who actually took the photos for the program and the magazine that they had here in Toronto called Stranglehold Magazine. And he kind of laid the law on me. He says, "You can't do that." And I was like, I didn't know who he was at the time. I was like, "Why not? What the?" He says, "Because it's copyright and he's going through the whole rigmarole." And I said, "Yeah, and what are you gonna rat me out?" And he goes, "Well, I work for Jack Tunney." And I went, "Uh-oh." And here's my brain is thinking, not I'm going to get in trouble with the law or anything like that. I'm like, oh God, I'm going to lose my wrestling tickets. But he said, "You don't seem like a bad guy. You know what? Why don't you just move down the block a little bit so they don't see you right in front of Maple Leaf Gardens doing this?" And then we became friends actually for a while. And then he said, "You know what? I'm going to introduce you to Jack. Maybe I can bring you on board to be my assistant photographer." So I met Jack. He introduced me to him. He says, "Well, we don't need another photographer, but we'll find something for the kid to do." And that's when I kind of got my foot in the door as the gopher, as the guy who went, go get this, go get that, do this for us. Jack would hand me the keys to his Fleetwood Cadillac and say, "Yeah, go up to the airport Marriott and pick up Andre the Giant.
Wow.
Bring him." And I'm like, "Yes, sir." But at the time, I'm driving all the way there going, "Oh my God, I'm going to go pick up Andre the Giant. This is incredible." And that's where it started. That's where I got my foot in the door.
Wow, that's amazing, man, to be on the outside and then get the opportunity to, next thing you know, you're taking the president's keys and you're picking up Andre. I mean, you can't beat that gig, Tom.
No, that is a dream come true, right? For any professional wrestling fan to be in that environment where you go from sitting ringside to driving the eighth wonder of the world, my Lord above. So speak to us a little bit, Jimmy, but about being a fan. So who were some of your favorites growing up? Who were the ones that you were clamoring to take those pictures of?
For me, it was because in Toronto, before WWF took over the territory from Jack, most of his talent came from the Mid-Atlantic region. That's who, from the Crocketts. And the beautiful thing about wrestling at Maple Leaf Gardens was they brought in talent from everywhere. Like, I remember on one show they had Nick Bockwinkel, AWA champion, versus WWF champion Bob Backlund. And that's unheard of in day, like today's day, but back then, it was the norm where you'd have people coming from everywhere. So I gravitated more towards the NWA talent, the Mid-Atlantic talent, I was a big fan of Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood when they were a tag team. Roddy Piper used to come in, and there was something about him that, of course, that was just that drew you in. He was just that kind of talent. And who else was there? There was Wahoo McDaniel. I was a big fan of Wahoo McDaniel too. Of course, we got Ric Flair a lot. And even though he was a heel, it's still, he was the Nature Boy. You know what I mean? And this was before I started to get more. I'm looking for the right phrasing for this. Smarter. I don't want to use the term smarter. It's more in tune with how heels are supposed to be presented in wrestling. You know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to say here? But at the same time, even though he was a dastardly heel, and I booed him like everybody else, there's still something about him that you wanted to see him. You know, and those are the main guys from there, from the Mid-Atlantic territory, is who I gravitated towards.
It must be incredible. I mean, looking at that list, there were quite a few of those individuals that you actually got to work alongside. So that, heartwarming, full circle, and a childhood dream. We hear so many childhood dreams when it comes to professional wrestling, but that is a genuine one. We loved it. Brian, you're my childhood dream brother. Let's bet it over. Let's see what's going on.
The people you mentioned there, like a lot of the Mid-Atlantic guys, that I was surprised, I guess, because Toronto, I would think that you would have a lot of the Canadian stars, Calgary guys, maybe Vancouver guys. But again, of course, crossing the border and getting guys in there, that's great that you were exposed to that many different areas. Like having an AWA guy work, in Toronto, that's, I mean, that was loaded plate, man. Can't
Yeah,
beat
I
that.
thought I'm not sure. I don't want to, overstep my knowledge, but it felt like Toronto was that melting pot where all the, where Jack would bring in talent from everywhere. I mean, mainly from Mid-Atlantic, but you know what I mean? We would get, Leo Burke, who was big in Calgary at the time, people like that, and people from the East Coast of Canada, they would filter them in. But again, the main card was basically Mid-Atlantic talent because Jack had a working relationship with the Crocketts at the time.
So you get your big break in to become a referee. In those early days of being a referee, I'm always curious about this because I always think back to when I got my first few breaks. But who, and a lot of fans always ask these questions. So who were your early road dogs? Who were your traveling buddies in those early days of WWF once you became a full-time referee? Who'd you ride with?
Because I was on the ring crew, it was mostly the ring crew that I rode with, because guys like Tony Chimmel, Mike Chioda, those guys, unfortunately had to ride with Chimmel for most of that time. But but those were the guys that I rode with. Every once in a while, somebody would be stuck at the building, and like he'd be running late, taking a shower too long, and somebody would leave him and said, "Hey, you guys got room in the car for us?" And yeah, jump in, whatever. But that was mostly Larry Heck, the trainer. Eventually, later on, when he
Later
came
on,
on board, but it was basically that. And someone who's now in charge of the merchandise at WWE, Derek Castleman, we, affectionately call him Pumpkinhead. He was a big riding partner with me here in Canada when I had to drive the Canadian ring truck all over the place.
And just I'm going to touch on that just for a second because that goes so unnoticed by the wrestling world about how hard you guys work. I mean, I would witness it firsthand. It was unbelievable. You guys would be there early, set up the ring, work the show, take down the ring, put it in a truck, and drive to wherever, who knows where, and do it all over again. I mean, that schedule was had to be. I mean, it's hard for us. It was a next level grueling for you guys. I just want to let people out there that are listening to know and appreciate the work that these guys have done.
Well, I appreciate that very much. It was tough, but at the same time, when it's something you love, you don't mind doing it. I mean, obviously, you have those days where you complain and you go, "I can't believe we had to drive 3 hours after the show," and stuff like that. But for me, it wasn't so bad because at the time I was a smoker. I used to smoke. So if you give me a pack of cigarettes, a bunch of Pepsi, and those, remember those cheesy puffs, those Cheetos,
Yeah,
and a
sure.
radio, I can drive all night long. That's all I needed, you know? And let me go. Just point me in the right direction and I can go.
Absolute heroes, right? Well, as we do with the Meltdown, we do dedicate the shows to unique heroes. So we are going to dedicate this show to all the past and present members of the ring crew, the referees, the officials that work behind the scenes, and every cog in that massive machine that you as viewers don't get to see all the time that make the magic happen. We raise our glasses to you guys. Thank you so much. Thank you, Jimmy, for all the years. Incredible. Love it. Love it. Now,
Thank you.
you become a referee with the WWF at the time, and you progress all the way through to WWE. And there are so many evolutions when it comes to the actual job that you guys do in the ring. One of the most notable things that a lot of, and we used the word before, smarter fans notice was the earpieces as things progress through. Now, who's talking to you guys on the earpieces? What kind of commands are you getting? Have you ever had Vince on the earpiece with you, chewing you out as he did with the announcers? Give us a little insight as to what's going into your ears.
Vince rarely, if ever, spoke to us on the earpiece. Usually it was either Bruce Pritchard or Gerald Briscoe for the most part. Every once in a while, whoever was the agent slash producer for the match would jump on and give some instruction. But generally it was them giving us time. That's what the original plan was for the earpiece, because before the earpiece, obviously they couldn't communicate messages to us, so we'd have to look at the timekeeper and he would flash hand signals to us to give us the times and count us down. And
Okay.
when he put the pencil in his mouth, that was a sign like, hey, go home, we have to go now. But then the evolution of the earpiece came along, and it began as, okay, we'll count you down, it'll be a lot easier, you can hear it, you don't have to start trying to view the timekeeper all the time and kind of focus your attention there. You can focus your attention on your job and doing the match. And it was great because all they would tell, okay, tell them we got six left. We got six left. We're going to break. Tell them we're going to break. You know, whatever the count. Now, then all of a sudden it became somebody, well, tell them to do this. And now what you're thinking is, okay, I will tell them, I will pass the message. But now I got to find a creative way to do it so it doesn't look like I'm overtly walking over to someone and saying, hey, they want you to grab a hold, or they want you to do this. So you're in the process of admonishing someone, or if someone is selling, you're checking on them, and you're motioning in a way that it looks like you're doing your referee job as opposed to passing a message. So you have to look for those spots, and all of a sudden you have to, you know, did you tell them? Did you tell them? Did you pass it along? And then we, unlike today where they have the talk back button where you can talk back to them and say, yeah, they got it. You had to do a hand sign like, did they get it? Yes. Okay. You put your hand up, let them know everything's cool.
Wow, what an interesting peek behind the curtain, Brian. I love that. I am definitely going to
Yeah.
use the pen in mouth when it's time to go home.
It goes this way, but it goes this way.
Was it right?
Yeah. Crossways.
Learned something today, big man.
I know. Well, the whole evolution of the business continues even today. I like it. Good inside knowledge for all of our listeners out there listening to the Meltdown, and we appreciate it. I got another question as we cruise on to through your career here. This earpiece is not going to help you on this one now. The strike, the referee strike of 1999. What was going on there? Tell me about that.
Famous. I've got it on my wall.
Yeah. Where else but the WWF slash WWE referees going on strike?
Well, that wasn't the original plan. What happened was I was getting married at the time, and I went to JR and I asked, hey, is it possible? You know how hard it is, Brian,
Oh.
to get any time off. So I just said, look, I'm getting married on the 5th of September. Is there any way I can get like 2 weeks for a honeymoon? And so and JR was cool. I love JR. And he said, sure. Don't worry about it. You'll have a job when you get back. Don't start worrying about that stuff. And I'm like, okay, cool. While I was away, they started the angle where the referees were going on strike because they felt that they were being abused by the talent and that sort of thing. I had no idea this was going on because while I was on my honeymoon, I didn't watch any wrestling because I wanted to stay married. So, I get back and everybody, hey, welcome back. How was the honeymoon? Stuff like this. And I run into Hunter. And Hunter used to call me, had a nickname for me. Hey, Corduroy, welcome back. How was the honeymoon? I said, it was great. Had a great time. He says, how does it feel to be out of a job now that you're back? Ha, ha, ha. And I said, well, Hunter, I just got married. I can't afford to go on strike. And he laughed. He went, ha, ha, come with me. And I went, what? What did I do? Did I piss him off? Like, what the heck did I say? And he takes me to JR. He says, hey, JR, Corderas had a great idea. And I'm thinking, I did? What's that? Then they decided to go with, I would be the only referee that would break the picket line, the regular referee, and be a scab, which would culminate in later on in the No Way Out pay-per-view where they had the six-pack challenge and the other referees would come to ringside, drag me out of the ring and just beat the crap
I
out of
watched
me.
that
And
last night. Yes.
Kyoto, yes, I owe you a few receipts still to this day. He kicked me so hard I passed the kidney stone.
They did put the boots to you. I gotta admit, they didn't hold back.
The good thing is, the funny thing is, like I said, Mike was the biggest offender, let's put it that way. And Steve Austin came in to save the day for me. And afterwards, Steve said, I got him for you.
You know the rattlesnake's got your back. You are in for a good day at work. Wow. Well, Mike Kyoto, we are looking down the line to you, brother. The receipts apparently are still coming after 26 years. We love you, Mike. Amazing. Well, we come to that point of our beautiful chat on this episode of The Meltdown, where we're going to insert a brand new game show for our viewers and listeners. For those of you that are fans of Mount Rushmore that got introduced to superstar armchair booking, we are going to bring a brand new game to you this afternoon as we pit our two incredible talents against each other. This new game show is called International Incident, and it is going to pit the USA against Canada with a little British seasoning on top. It's going to be Brian Clark against Jimmy Corderas, and I'm going to pitch them some very British words and phrases, and they've got to throw their hand up as quick as they can to give me an answer for what it translates to into American or Canadian. So, boys, are you ready to play? Who's going over?
I don't
I'll
know.
find
Who
out. I have no idea. We did a little test run pre-show and
How did you get on with that?
did the job. So,
I think it was a draw. I think it was a draw.
We went Broadway with it. Well, let's find out how well we do. It's our international incident. It's USA versus Canada. First one to throw their hands up. Okay, I'm going to start you easy. Brolly. The word brolly. What is a brolly?
You said this
Three,
was easy?
two, one. A brolly is an umbrella. An umbrella. A lift. A lift. Jimmy, Jimmy.
That one, elevator.
Elevator, there we go. Jimmy gets the first point, first to three. All right, wellies. Wellies, wellies, wellies. What could they be? Three, two, one. Wellington boots. Wellington boots are our wellies. The big rubber boots. Oh, right. The phrase, it's chucking it down. Brian.
Pouring down rain
Yes,
or
mate. There we go. He's got a point back. He's got a point back. He's doing really well. Proper chuffed. If someone is proper chuffed, this would be good for a certain Will Ospreay to use in his promos. If an individual is proper chuffed. Three, two, one. Oh, the look on your face. I think it might just be best of three. Proper chuffed, really happy. Really happy. Let's see. If I'm going to offer you a brew and biscuits, what would I be offering you? Brew and biscuits. Brew a bit. Go on, Jimmy.
Beer and crackers? I don't know.
No. I
I
am going to
was
give you the answer,
ha
though. We've got to get one more. A brew and biscuits is a cup of tea and cookies that you dunk in your brew. Yes,
I
we
was
call it a
way
brew.
off.
All right. If I was to be chatting shit, what would I be doing? Three, two, one. talking rubbish. If I'm chatting shit, I'm talking rubbish. And ultimately, it looks like that this is exactly what this feature is doing right now. I'm going to give you one more.
Okay.
What is, let's have a look, bollocks. Go on, Jimmy.
What are the language parameters on here?
We're good. You're on YouTube. You can do whatever you want.
Bullshit.
Oh, no. The far more sort of part of your body is what we're looking for. Closer to home. I'm
Oh,
counting you down in 3, 2, 1.
I gotta get
Bollocks.
another shot. I don't know.
Testicles. Testicles is what we were looking for with
Oh,
bollocks. I can't believe in USA versus Canada, I'm going to put the UK has gone forward. I can't believe you guys put up with that.
yes.
What happened there? That might be the first and last time we play international incident.
I didn't travel with Davey enough, I guess, back in the day because I was completely lost.
Wasn't even there. I
Oh
wasn't
my God.
there.
That was the first thing that came to my mind when you mentioned Davey. It wasn't me. I wasn't even there. Wasn't even there.
You know, Davey was born about 10 miles away from where I am right now.
Oh, wow.
And the Dynamite Kid was probably about 3 minutes down the road in Prestwich, where he lived out
Amazing.
the rest of his life. So we like to bring it home. We are very northwest bound, and love to live that wrestling dream, as it were. Thank you very much for playing, boys. I can't believe both of you took the L. You can officially sell merchandise and advertising on your shoes. The Tomcat takes the win. I love it. I'll go for it. I'll go for it. Right, we're going to get back to it. Right, let's talk about we've been through the start, we've been through roading, we've been through ring crew setups, we've been through the 1999 referee strike. But Jimmy Corderas, talk to me about the worst bump you have ever taken in your career.
The worst bump?
Yeah,
Oh
man.
boy. Taking some nasty ones of my own accord. I mean, like I nobody's really hurt me. I've done it to myself a couple of times. One was Vader actually got me pretty good.
Oh.
When he debuted, he was wrestling Savio Vega, and part of the deal was he was going to grab me and give me a headbutt. And when he did, I had hair then, so he was able to grab me by the hair. He hits me with his headbutt so hard I chip a tooth. And I'm woozy. And he gives me another one, and then shoots me out of the ring. And I fall on the floor, and Savio rolls out, and he just puts his arm around me. And says, "Stay here, kid. I got you." I was like Dream Street, but worse than that, WrestleMania 4, the Intercontinental Title match with Honky Tonk Man and Brutus Beefcake. Beefcake has Honky in the sleeper hold. Jimmy Hart pops up on the apron, so I go over to tell him to get down. Come on, Jimmy, get down. And when I turn my back, he takes a megaphone. He waffles me from behind. I go down. Now the megaphone shot was fine. Problem was when I wanted to face plant, it was WrestleMania. I wanted to make it look good, so I wanted to land as flat as I could. I had my hands down, but my hands shot out like as soon as they hit the canvas, and my chin hit the sweet spot, and it was right near the edge of the ropes there. Where it's those old rings were hard enough as it is,
Oh.
but it was even harder then by the apron, and it lights out. I don't remember a darn thing. And everybody came out and started helping me back. And the other refs, they got on me in the back when they dragged me back. Because they thought I was dead weighting them. I'm like, "What are you guys talking about?" And they said, "Yeah, you guys, you didn't even help us when we were helping you out." I'm like, "What the hell are you talking about? Help me out? I didn't even remember that. I didn't know it until I saw it back." But yeah, I got knocked out, and that's when they finally realized. They said, "Oh, maybe he wasn't, ribbing us." Well, I wasn't gonna rib you guys. I mean, like, I didn't know what the hell happened.
Well, that's what happens at times.
Oh, I did tear my th almost tore my thumb off once.
Oh.
That wasn't
Well,
from a bump.
let's
That
hear about that. What happened there?
it wasn't from a bump. It was like one of those deals where I was being chased around the ring by Umaga, and I went to slide out the bottom rope, and the ring apron, the rope from the ring apron, my thumb caught it. It almost became parallel with my wrist.
Oh.
And it was like, oh boy, one of those
That's
deals.
supposed to
It was
go
an
that way.
afternoon show at the Garden, which meant I got to go home that night. So as I'm driving home with a bucket of ice and my thumb in a bucket of ice, like an idiot, I drove by the the old hangout with the boys that I used to hang out with at home. and they're all out drinking their coffees and stuff like that. And they said, "Hey, we're going to a movie. You want to come?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." So I went to a movie. My thumb's like a grapefruit. Anyway,
It
young and
happened.
stupid.
Well, I mean, there we all get busted up and banged up in this business, as you know. You witnessed it. I can imagine how many times you've witnessed guys getting horrendous injuries. A lot of people have no idea about what really happens, is especially when it's live and there's, if it's taped, you got a little bit of a chance to cover it up, but when you're live, it's a whole different ball game.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And at least you're still here to tell the story, because so many people that have met Haku over the years, just nobody can find them for some reason. I've no idea why.
You know what? He is a sweetheart. He's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And I don't understand to this day why anybody would try to push his buttons. Because, Brian, he's the kind of guy that if you start to push his buttons a little bit, he'll give you a warning or two first. He'll say,
Yes,
"Hey,
that's true.
dude,
Yes.
calm down, because if you keep this up, you're not going to like where this is going to go." And then they keep prodding, they keep prodding, and then he'll take care of business and then go back to having a nice pop and smile on his face.
Have either of you seen that firsthand?
I have watched him give warnings to guys. I have. I'm sure Jimmy has too.
Yes.
But like you said, he's one of my favorite people in this business. One of the, I love working with him. I love his style. I work sort of the same way, and I've worked him in singles. I worked him in tag matches, and just every time, always just on point with everything. Just a phenomenal worker and a great talent.
Absolutely.
We're coming up actually to the very, very nearly to the anniversary of Halloween Havoc 98, when it was Wrath versus Meng. What a beast of a match that was. If you're looking for a match where you can see big men slapping meat, that is the one. Go out your way, find it in your Google machine. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it anywhere that the WWE has got access to Halloween Havoc. That is the one to watch, peeps. Speaking of the ones to watch, Jimmy, you were part of another very, very famous match, and it occurred at SummerSlam 2000. We are still on the SummerSlam train. We have just entered fall, but SummerSlam 2000 was the debut of the TLC match, the Dudleys, the Hardys, and Edge and Christian. What's it like reffing a match just like that, with so many different moving parts? Communication from the back. What are you doing to keep everybody safe, to keep everything on track, and to make it the best it possibly can be?
Just like you said, be there and make sure everybody's okay. First thing and foremost is the safety of the talent. And sitting in the back while they're going over everything and listening to it, I'm thinking to myself, "Whoa, this is going to be intense." So I have to be aware and start thinking, hopefully everybody's okay, but I have to look for certain signs if someone's not. Because the participants involved, you got the Dudleys, you got the Hardys, you got Edge and Christian. Even if they got dinged up a little bit, they're not going to let it. No, I'm good. That was the mentality back there. No, I'm good. I'm going to finish this. So, like I said, safety of the talent was first and foremost. And the other thing too that people don't realize, I know, especially Bubba, Bubba didn't like us getting involved in like holding a ladder or anything like that. So you had to let them do their thing. Just stay out of the way, but be there. And there's other little things like, because there's so many objects involved, like I said, tables, ladders, and chairs. When they're going to run a spot, you have to be sure that stuff is out of the way so they can actually do what they want to do. Like, because tables break and then there's pieces of table everywhere. So you got to look for anything from a little bolt or a little piece of the table that's still in the ring. And you don't want somebody bumping on that because, get embedded in their back or anything like that. So you're constantly keeping your eye on it. And then the other challenge is trying to communicate times again, because you're outside the ring the whole time. So again, you have to find spots where you can actually communicate to someone. A lot of the times guys would be outside, so you can go to them. You're off camera anyway. Go to them and let them know so they can pass it along to the other guys.
Working constantly, yeah. I mean, having to keep your eyes and ears just focused. I mean, that's you have to be constantly. I want to piggyback off of that right there with the Tomcat. Currently, two of those teams are coming up here. A question that involves two of these guys, two of these teams in particular. What are your thoughts about the Dudleys and the Hardys working together for one final time? At TNA's Bound for Glory, after all these years later, what are your thoughts on those guys working again?
I like it. I mean, a lot of people are going to say, oh, come on, let's have they're taking a spot away from young talent that could be featured on Bound for Glory or something like that. But at the same time, you have guys who are, look at the Hardys, one of the greatest tag teams of all time.
Right.
The Dudleys, also one of the greatest tag teams of all time. And you can argue best here, best there, whatever. But and they are superstars. They bring eyes to the product. People will pay to see them. You will get people to tune into the pay-per-view to see that match. And when they do, they'll be looking at the other talent. And hopefully that filters down. They say, oh, you know what? I didn't know about Leon Slater. I wasn't aware of somebody like a Moose. I wasn't aware of this person. So you're bringing more eyes to the other talent. So it's a trickle-down effect. So I like it. I like the idea. You got, like, again, two legendary tag teams going in there, and the Hardys are still doing it strong. Man, they don't look much different than that 2000 TLC match that you were talking about. I mean, they look fantastic.
I was going to say on their social media pages, man, they're always working out, training. They look great. They really have gotten themselves in excellent shape. Very lean, ripped, conditioned. I think people are going to be in for a big surprise. So I know I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
And I'm glad. And Devon, at one point, it didn't look like he would be able to enter the
Right.
ring again. I'm glad he's able to. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think he went and saw DDP down in Atlanta, who helped him out and helped him get his back better. And
Oh,
that's
good.
amazing. The stuff Dallas is doing down there is amazing.
Well, it's good that he's healthy again. I know he had a back surgery a while back, and it takes time for that to heal up. And then everything else that goes with it, the work he's putting in, it should be good. Really be a good
I'm
match.
looking forward to it, man.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Big advocate for DDPY right here, sat in Manchester, the complete other side of the world. But Dallas, yes, you are doing wonders. And for those of you that are thinking, they are wondering, they are pondering whether or not they should give it a go out of your way to give it a go. Hit up the free trial and see exactly what DDPY can do for you. I have lost a lot, about 32 pounds, the current droppage in terms of weight, just from doing from literally, as Dallas says, from standing still. So go for it. Go out of your way and do it. Lots of wonderful professional athletes are using that program and doing an incredible job with it. Well, I want to take you into a scenario as we're talking about current products. We're talking about TNA Bound for Glory. And yes, big praises go out to the Hardys, who were the first team to ever win the NXT tag titles and the TNA tag titles at the same time. It's nice to be interpromotional brand champions. That's got to be a first, right? And it's always good to be first. What I want to ask you is, a couple of weeks ago on SmackDown, there was an incident when it came to a three count that wasn't completed by SmackDown referee, Daphne LeSean. What is your impressions on that, Jimmy? Should that count have been made? What do you guys do when the planned finish goes completely awry?
See, that's a tough spot for especially younger referees who haven't been, in that situation before, because it does happen. Back under the old regime, under Vince McMahon, there was an edict put down that, listen, if the talent does not kick out or does not get back in the ring, by the time you count three, or by the time you count 10, then you count three and you count 10, and it's on them, and you tell them to come back and see me, because you know where the heat's going to go down. The heat's going to go down on you as a referee. You know what rolls downhill anyway. But in her case, it's a tough situation, because you have a split second to make a decision, and it was something else that precipitated this that caused her to get a little confused, I believe. Jade hit Nia with the boss man slam, I guess. I don't know what you call it. It looked great. And when she covered, you can see Nia's looking out of the corner of her eye, waiting for Tiffany to make the save, so Tiffany can cover and steal the win. Tiffany was late, so Nia kicked out instead of having Tiffany make the save. So that probably threw Daphne off a little bit. And then when Tiffany covered, I guess she assumed, since she kicked out before, that Nia was going to kick out again, even though I think that was supposed to be the finish. She didn't kick out. Nia, thinking, this is the finish, she did this sweep and kind of fudged it a little bit, and everybody looked at each other confused. And I think that's what caused this whole thing to happen. After watching it back Monday morning quarterbacking, Tiffany was going over on Nia anyway. So what she should have counted three anyways. At the end of the day, yes, she should have counted three. Now they had to, kind of reset everything and go, and Tiffany did that moonsault and covered Nia for the pin. So it wouldn't have changed anything if she did count three.
Yeah.
And she owned it. She apologized for it. You know what I mean? So that's all you can do. But maybe someone else a little more savvy, a little more experienced in that situation would have counted three. It's hard to say, because like I said, you have a split second to make that decision, right or wrong. It's kind of like a while back. I remember one referee, I guess it was when Drew McIntyre was going to cash in Money in the Bank, and Seth had hit Damian Priest with something. The referee, same thing happened where the referee should have counted three and it didn't. But in that case, it was a different scenario because it was a different outcome for the match. So he did the wrong thing for the right reasons. Because it's easier to make that error and count three, not error really, but to count three if it doesn't change the outcome. And it seems to happen more in three-way matches, because in my mind, my opinion, sometimes they try to overbook and over complicate the endings, as opposed to keeping it simple where people could understand it even better. Is that, I don't,
I agree with
maybe I'm just
no,
the old man
no,
screaming at the
no,
clouds and
no.
telling people to get off my lawn, but it's like, let's make it really, really intricate so that people go, oh, ooh, ah, ooh, and instead of making it, make it simple and say, hey, you know what? Tiffany stole the win off from Jade. Anyways, I'm just rambling now.
No, I agree with that. And I've mentioned this to Tom in the past about the three ways, and it's just too much. Let the people digest it. They're not having enough time to soak it in. Okay, this is okay. Now I got it. Now, instead of trying to jump all over the place and get with the story, yeah, that's just my thoughts.
No, we have the same conversation when it comes to finishes. How many times in a particular match can a superstar hit a finish and there be a kick out? It is the bane of my life. It's the bane of my life. If you hit a finish and someone runs in and takes it away from you, that is completely different than a kick out. Once you kick out of a finish, what does that finish mean? Nothing. How many people kicked out of the meltdown, Brian?
None.
None. There
You
you
know,
go.
there is a simple fix if you want somebody to kick out of a finish. Have someone hit their finish, because usually it's been a grueling match when you hit your finish. The person hitting the move, sell for a few seconds, give it time, crawl over, make the cover. That gives you an out. because you didn't cover right away. You gave it a little bit of time. And the kick out, this is the part that drives me crazy. Sorry, guys. I know this is supposed to be a positive podcast, but and then when they kick out strong from somebody's finish. No, make it like you're really struggling to get that shoulder up. It's a little thing like that that make people, bite.
It should be that just that eke out at the end. It should be that foot on the rope or something. Just any which way you can, but don't come out of it strong. Goodness gracious me. Well, there you go. That's the edict from the meltdown. Keep finishing strong, baby.
Yeah, I like that.
When the pile driver becomes a transition move, you lost me.
Yeah. And when it's
I
hit
get the
multiple times in one match, right?
right. I get the evolution of the business, but I don't know about the evolution of the human anatomy and the neck area, but I guess that's evolved too into everybody being Iron Man. I don't know.
It's when you look back at programs that, and I hate to use the term back in the day, but when certain workers can work one punch and that is the entire rivalry on the fact that they have been or they've had their larynx broken, the Ricky Steamboat and Randy Savage thing, where you can literally do it off one move, larynx is done, you've got a 6 month program off one move, that yet you go into a standard match that is going to be on a week SmackDown, and then the following week it's a match against somebody else, and you're hitting six pile drivers. Come on, guys, come on. There we go. But again, three guys on soapboxes. There we go. Anyway, we get to that point. It's the moment that Brian has been waiting for, because it's right now. I'm going to rub those hands together and get them all warm and sweaty, because we are going to put the legend of Jimmy Corderas under the microscope as we play Winner Stays On. And Jimmy, we played this game with Earl Hebner. And I know we went over in that one. I'm going to find out who's going to go over as Winner Stays On, the ultimate referee. You're going to put one over and you are going to drop one. And we come to the next name. We go through the entire cycle until you give me your ultimate referee at the end. Are you ready to make that three count, brother?
I think so.
We'll see how we get there at the end. Brian, are
Okay.
you ready? It's going to go fast.
Let's do it, man. This should be good. I'm looking forward to
All right. Two
it.
names we're going to start off with. Charles Robinson or Mike Chioda?
Oh, you started off hard, man.
Yes, mate.
I'm longevity. I'm gonna go Charles, man. The guy's ageless.
Little Nate stays on. Charles Robinson or Tommy Young?
Tommy Young.
Tommy Young or Jack Doan?
Tommy Young.
Tommy Young or Nick Patrick?
I gotta go Tommy Young, man.
Tommy
Tommy Young
Young!
is, yeah.
Tommy Young or Earl Hebner?
Oh my goodness. This is a tough one. This is a tough one. This is a tough one. Sorry, my mentor Earl, but I gotta go Tommy Young.
Eked away. Tommy Young stays on. Tommy Young or Mickey Henson?
God bless Mickey, but Tommy Young. I'm a Tommy Young guy. What can I tell you?
But let's see if he gets all the way to the end. Tommy Young or Joey Morella?
Oh my goodness. Again, God bless Joey. Tommy Young is just the man.
Let's see. Let's
Well,
see if he is complete golden balls. Let's get him to the end. Tommy Young or Aubrey Edwards?
Tommy.
Tommy or one of your tag team partners, Brian Hebner.
Sorry, Brian, don't kick me off the podcast. Tommy Young.
It's going straight to you, Brian. Tommy Young or Teddy Long?
I love Teddy, but I still got to stick with Tommy Young.
Tommy Young or Timmy White?
You're not making this easy. I got to stay with Tommy. I got to stay with
Tommy
Tommy.
Young or Jimmy Corderas?
That's a no-brainer. Tommy Young.
Oh, brother.
Wow,
Amazing job. Hey, you know, we
burned
went
it
over in
through.
Earl's game.
I'm sorry?
Do you know who Earl put over?
No.
Tommy Young.
There was something about because he used to come up here to Toronto when I talked about, Jack Tunney having the Mid-Atlantic guys come up. Tommy Young used to come up as well. He's the first referee that made me actually appreciate referees. And then when I got older and I was able to understand the role of a referee, and going back and watching old matches that Tommy Young was involved with, I developed even more of an appreciation for what he did.
What a legend. I mean, like you said, the mid-Atlantic days, everybody always brings him up as far as just what an awesome talent he really was. Just the classics that he was interacting with Flair and everybody. I mean, but he made some of those matches so much more entertaining. Not that they were not, but it just took it up to another level. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing because the old adage that a good referee could make a good match even better. And a referee who is not so savvy could take a good match and bring it down.
I
Believe
Interesting
that.
analogy.
Yeah.
And experience is key. You can teach all the basics in a classroom, but experience is the thing that you pick up from years on the grind, right?
And the biggest thing they got to remember is, guess what? It's not about you. It's about the talent in the ring. You're helping them tell their story.
Like it.
Excellent. Excellent analogy. Well, seeing as we played two game shows, shall we give him one final one, Brian? I've not even done this on our show reel, but seeing as he has just shone that spotlight on Tommy Young, let's invite him, and I'm going to invite you as well, to carve out of stone your Mount Rushmore of professional wrestling referees.
Well, now that you've brought it up, Jimmy, go ahead, go for it.
Okay, this, obviously Tommy Young, as you guys heard earlier, he's on my Mount Rushmore. I definitely have to put Earl, but I'd love to, if it's possible, if you can do a double with Earl and David.
Okay,
Oh,
yeah.
yeah. So they count as one.
Yeah, the evil twins count as one,
The
right?
evil twins count as one. I was there that night too. That was incredible.
Were you? The night that Earl got thrown straight over the top of Ted DiBiase.
And had to get shoulder surgery after that.
Yes.
So that's two. Oh boy. This is tough.
It's when we put you on the spot, and it's always a good spot
Yeah.
to be because
You
you
know
know that
what?
you're.
There's a referee out of Texas that I really think is amazing and didn't get the opportunity to get the spotlight in on the national stage. James Beard.
Okay, that's a name, a blast from the past. I don't know when we're going to be talking about James Beard again, but yeah, that's wonderful. Excellent. We'll throw out some visuals.
I really enjoyed him, and if I have to pick a fourth, with all due respect to all the guys I worked with in WWF slash WWE, I got to go the Pee Wee. I got to go with Pee Wee.
Pee-wee Randy Anderson.
Yes.
Now there's a talent. You'll have worked with Randy quite a lot, right, Brian?
Yes. So many guys on this list I have worked with at one time or another, which is, and there's some great people on this list. Yeah.
He was brilliant. I remember the spot that he did with Eric Bischoff where Eric fired him on Nitro. Do you remember that? And he fired him from his job and he came back and he was like, "These are my kids and I've got to feed my kids and just give me my job back, Mr. Bischoff." And he led him down the garden path of that he was going to give him his job back and then pie-faced him right at the end. "No, you're not worthy of this job. Get out." And I thought that was incredible. Great storytelling. 97 was a really awesome year.
And how can you forget about Nick Patrick, who would end up going to the NWO as their own special referee at all times, which that was classic.
Absolutely. N
And of
who would
course,
feature on yours? Who would feature on yours, Brian?
I'm very similar. I would probably go with just to change up just a little bit. Definitely would say
Yep.
Charles Robinson, Tommy Young, Earl Hebner. But then I might go Timmy White just because he was
Gotcha.
such a sweetheart of a guy, man. I just love that guy. But all these refs, man, I had a relationship with every one of them, and except for Tommy. I've actually never met Tommy, but everybody else on here, and even Joey Morella, man, God bless him. Just great crew of guys, no doubt about it.
The third person in the ring is the key master, as it were, and the spotlight should definitely be shone more on our wonderful referees. And I truly hope that the WWE does start to acknowledge them a lot more with their Hall of Fame
Yes.
inductions. We got to see Timmy White inducted, but it was like a Warrior Award winner.
Yeah.
What are your impressions, Jimmy? Should we see more referees in the Hall of Fame?
I think it would be nice. I think there should be a spot for them as well because they are an integral part of any wrestling match, really, because if you don't
Every
have a
wrestling match.
referee, if you don't have a referee, then you don't have a contest as it's. I remember the old announcements. This contest is scheduled for one fall, but it would be a nice acknowledgement, especially because they put in the time. Obviously, we don't put in the bumps that you guys do, but we're there, and I think they're an important part of the presentation of professional wrestling. There should be maybe even if it's just a simple wing where you don't have to have them on the show proper, like with the Hall of Fame ceremony, you can just acknowledge them and induct them into the referee wing of the Hall of Fame, the announcer wing. There's so many guys behind the scenes that don't get acknowledged enough. Everybody from the guys who, the lighting guys, the rigging guys, the cameramen. I mean, like they've got some of the best cameramen in the world.
Oh, yeah.
You can't have a show that slick without the right people in the right place. You know what I mean? So, it'd be nice to acknowledge people that don't get their flowers generally.
Yeah, I definitely think that refs should be in. As a matter of fact, I think it's long overdue. I think this should have happened 20 years ago, easily. And not in their own wing, but right with the boys. It's a natural fit. So, well, as we're going to close out here on the meltdown, first of all, I want to say thank you. This has been a pleasure. This has been silky smooth as I thought it would be, because Jimmy is just that kind of cat. He's slick and he's made this very, very easy. But before we leave, I want to ask you and have you tell us a little bit about a couple of things that you have going on. And I see your daily rants. And what I mean, your daily rants are your reffing rants that are on Instagram and on your social media, but also let's talk about your podcast and also your book that you have out. I'd love to hear about it and let the fans out that are listening to the Meltdown right now, let them know where they can listen to you and also where they can get your book.
Okay. My ref and rants is something I like doing. It's just a minute and a half long. It's a little critique of something that I saw on television or whatever the case may be, whatever the topic of the day is, and it's meant to be fun. You know, it's not meant to crap on anything. It's meant to, any critiques are there for constructive criticism. And it's there to, in my mind, to help. And people don't take it that way, but hey, but you can find them on all my social media platforms. They're there from Monday to Friday. I do take weekends off. And of course, I have two podcasts on the go right now. One is called Reffin' It Up with Brian Hebner and Daniel Spencer, who's the current lead official in TNA. And also Huge Pop Radio with my good buddy Donnie DeSilva up here in Toronto. We have a blast, man. It's just. When he approached me with this idea, I said, I'm supposed to be retired, but you know what? For Donnie's a good dude and he's very smart, and I love listening to his presentation. The way his interview style is amazing.
Yeah.
And if
I've
anybody
done
hasn't
his
checked it
show.
out,
I've done his interview. I had a great time.
So if anybody hasn't checked it out, go check it out because you'll enjoy it. I guarantee it. And what else? Oh, the book. Yes, the book. I wrote that a little while back. It's called The Three Count, My Life in Stripes as a WWE referee. You can find it out there on Amazon and other places. And who knows? Maybe time for another one in the near future.
Awesome, man. Again, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. We appreciate it. Again, I know how busy you are with two shows, your book, the reffing it up. You're a busy man, even though you are retired. You're still a very busy man.
Yeah, well,
So
I
we
appreciate
again.
you. Yeah,
Yeah, man.
I really appreciate you guys having me on it. This has been a lot of fun, and I feel terrible that I don't know British terms and stuff, but
We
I'm gonna have to brush up on that.
Well, working with Tomcat here, we're on our, just past our 6 month anniversary. So you would think that I would have picked up a little bit of that by now, but I'm still so far behind. I got a ways to go, Tom.
I tell you what, I hit you with some stumpers right there. But I'm going to have to send in the post some brewing biscuits to both of you. Yes, some proper dunkable digestives. Let's swerve away from the coffee and hit up some English breakfast tea as you start your mornings. We love it. Oh, Jimmy, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a spectacle to welcome a legend to our show. Ladies and gentlemen, he is an icon. Give it up for the zebra stripes of Jimmy Corderas. What an incredible chat with legendary referee Jimmy Corderas. Thank you so much, mate, for coming and joining us on the Meltdown, dropping some beautiful black and white striped knowledge. Oh, it was an epic show. We loved that, didn't we, Brian?
Great time, Jimmy. Thank you for all the knowledge. Thank you for stopping by and joining us on the Meltdown. And make sure you join us each and every Monday. A lot of big names coming your way very soon. As always, it's the Tomcat. I'm the creation of devastation. We are breaking necks and cashing checks every Monday on the Meltdown. We will see you then.
A boom.